Welcome to a new episode of Kage Space, a podcast where we pretty much talk anything under the sun. This is your host, Kage, and yeah, this is the first in this podcast. We're doing this in audio format, so you get to see me with my long ass hair in person and with my co-host today. So yeah, I would like to introduce him myself, but it's usually better to let the person do the honor. So esteemed guests, please tell the audience who you are and what are you up to?
Yo, what's good? I'm Tej, and you know me from my own podcast, although it's in Filipino format. That's Backlog na naman Budolcast. We also cover video games, but mostly the hidden gems. I have a co-host with me, although she's not around. She's my wife. She goes by the name of Atikas. So yeah, that's pretty much what we do. Yeah.
So yeah, Sir Tej, it's a pleasure to have you here. And yeah, the reason why this recording, or rather this episode, was brought up is because we were both guests on the Gameslog podcast. Feel free to check that out, where we talk about primarily JRPGs and whatnot. It's a really fun episode, but it took like almost 3 hours in recording time. And thankfully, you managed to cut it in like 2 hours and a half, I guess.
It's understandable. Yeah, it's understandable. Yeah. We were like five?
Yeah, there's like multiple back and forths, and yeah, it was like a fun subject. But the thing is that there were a lot of things that people weren't able to talk about because, you know, run times, and there's a lot of things that we could have like pinpointed out and whatnot. So you could kind of like, in a way, think of it as like an extension of the show. But we won't be going way too much into the details, but because, you know, we respect people's times. And editing is a nightmare for the most part. But primarily, if you've seen the title card, basically we're going to be talking about modern titles that people could get into. I'm not sure if anyone has noticed, but for the past, let's say, 4 to 5 years, to my understanding, role-playing games, and primarily the Japanese role-playing games genre, has made a renaissance. If there's ever a single title that kickstarted, or rather set the gears for the whole thing, is probably Persona 5 Royal, which we'll get into it later. But yeah, we are going to be talking about modern games that people can check out to get into this particular genre. So long ass intro aside, let's get this started, basically. So Sir Tej, what is your experience with RPGs in general? It doesn't have to be specific with the Japanese ones or whatnot.
But sad to say, I'm more exposed on the JRPG side. That's where I was cognizant of the genre. In fact, my very first video game that involves RPGs is Chrono Cross. You probably heard of this from my own episodes, from my other guestings. It's ironic because it's supposed to be Chrono Trigger. That's even more well-known and popular. But in my case... I became cognizant of Chrono Cross because I saw this random footage playing somewhere in the mall here in the Philippines. It was actually playing, or if you're familiar with those shops like Circuit City, they usually run the menus, right? Like there's a certain cutscene playing, then there's the even the circuit guy is playing the game. So it was like, oh, what game is this? So a few moments or instances later, my older brother was able to buy a PlayStation 1, and then we get to experience that game. And I was like, oh, this is that game that I saw from the mall. So I fell in love at first sight with that genre. Actually, that was the first game that gave me a first hands experience on narrative, games with narrative, because we know for a long time, like if we're playing video games, we're mostly familiar with platformers like Super Mario, what else, Sonic, and the like, right? But here, I was given a glimpse of, oh, this is actually a game with a story. So yeah, several instances later, so I was introduced to other RPGs like Legend of Ligaia, Breath of Fire 4, and well, I guess the rest is history. So that's what brought me to the genre and video gaming in general, actually. Not necessarily, but I really started with platformers like Super Mario, but I became more involved with gaming when I got introduced to what do you call this? To the RPGs. Yeah.
Yeah, the reason why I'm asking is because just in case my audio my listeners have no idea what show we're back in regards to gaming specifically. Because the funny thing about this is that everybody is like their unique origin story in a way,
mm-hmm.
to the point that you kind of like get to be great to other people, or that is, you get to understand that's a weird branch out from what you usually get exposed to for the most part. As for me, in case that newcomers are coming in, because it is like basically a reboot of the series at this point, I originally started out playing. I wanted to say Polystation, but realistically, I'd say do you know those VCD players back in the day?
They have incorporated Famicom, I don't know, emulators or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's where I started primarily. My dad basically bought like a VCD player in Laon. If you guys live in the Philippines, you know where the fuck that place is. But basically, in Laon, they have like VCD players there, and they have they included what NES style, not necessarily NES. Of course, the design is like an SNES style controller, but it comes with how many games? 701.
701.
Yeah,
I was able to play. I remember playing Twinbee there. That's the only memory that I could recall playing something on a VCD. Twinbee.
Yeah, funny enough, Twinbee is the only thing that works fine there. For the most part, if you grew up, let's say in the late 90s or early 2000s, you get to buy this multi-game cartridge, this or whatever the fuck platform you're playing, because piracy was huge. So oftentimes you get like duplicates of those things.
Yeah.
So it's for the most part, I'm primarily exposed to the arcade style of games. You die, reset, Strikers 1945, 97, 47.
Yeah.
That's where I got my game exposure initially. But as for RPGs, I'd say probably around early to the mid 2000s, where my older brother, started in college, and of course, since he's taking up computer science, obviously you have to get a PC at some point. And yeah, he has what's the term that I'm looking for? We basically emulated Super Nintendo's there and PS1's. So the games in the RPG genre wise, the games that I was primarily exposed to are the Super Nintendo Final Fantasies and Grand Jet 2.
Nice. Wait, what's that? PlayStation 2?
Grand Jet 2 came out on the Sega Dreamcast.
All right.
And there's a PC release. So the one that we have is basically a burnt copy, pirated copy of the PC. This, because, you know, the internet is semi-accessible at that point, but buying original copies from stores were like, what? How much? Somewhere between 1,800 to 2,000 pesos. And if you factor inflation nowadays, that's fucking expensive with today's money.
Yeah.
But yeah, aside from that, my uncle bought like a PS1. So Legend of the Gaia, Final Fantasy VII to some degree, though I didn't have good memories of it. But it primarily started with the SNES Final, Super Nintendo or Super Famicom Final Fantasy ones. So those games in particular, I mean, that's the reason why I'm asking, because I wanted to have like a gauge which game or which entry has a special place in your heart. Because oftentimes, even though if you have like a different, let's say, origin or where you started from and you got exposed to these things and it became like you fell in love with this genre, the first game that you experience is oftentimes like your baseline, basically. So it's kind of funny that us like early 30s guys or late 20s, depends on how you look at it, have like a strong longing or a weird strong fascination with games like Final Fantasy VII, even though if you look at it design-wise, there's a lot of faults in it. Sir Teach, I'm curious, if you're gonna be like introducing, let's say, a modern RPG title with all the stuff that we mentioned earlier, what is the one unit you want to introduce first to other people so that they can get like a certain feel of the genre?
Are we going to talk about newer RPGs right now, or yeah?
When I say modern, let's say we can go back to as early as PS3 because the formula has been established since as early as PS1, refined on PS2, and PS3 is where I'd say more of the better ones are coming out. So you can go PS3 onwards.
My concern also, with this. Ah, all right, go ahead.
You can also count remakes as well. Because, you know, modern game development as well. So you can squeeze that in if you want.
We can also include remakes, right?
Yeah.
All right. I have one concern with this one because the PlayStation 3 is technically my blind spot. My family, or me, Jen in general, I wasn't really blessed to own a PlayStation 3. I was only able to experience the PlayStation 3, sadly, very too late. In fact, I think way back in 2018 or something. That's already very recent. 2018 is basically the PlayStation 4 era right now. So maybe I could just go into the PlayStation 4 if you don't mind. Most of my AAA experiences are, I have my Steam library, if that counts. Most of my games here are concurrent releases with PlayStation 4. But if I'm going to recommend one modern RPG, I think I can go with Nier Automata. It's easy to get into. The gameplay is not very difficult. In fact, in hindsight, when I look back during my gameplay, I always thought of it as was like how do I articulate this? I thought it was a Souls-like because we know that action RPGs are, I don't know, presents a bit of a challenge to some extent. But when I got into the game, I really enjoyed it, and it didn't really pose any certain difficult, steep difficult or learning curve or something. It was just about right. And what I would like about this game as well is it also presents a very beautiful narrative. The only unpopular trait about this game is it presents a very depressing theme. You know for one, right? If you play this game,
yeah.
But I can say I can vouch for this game. If they're into heavy narratives, especially if they like media to actually provoke them into thinking something or to provoke their critical thinking. So I think I can recommend Nier Automata. It doesn't really give you the burnout factor. In fact, I really enjoy that game, even though the game presented itself has multiple endings. But you can actually ignore that if you're not into a completionist run. If you are very particular with the narrative, I think the game itself would encourage you to push through the different endings, especially getting ending E. When I first played the game, I was like, oh, I know that this game has multiple endings, but I was like, I'm not really inclined to get the ending, but, well, a few instances later, I found myself, oh, I was actually working through getting the ending E. So I think I just ate my own words. So I guess, yeah, the game itself is very compelling. That's what I can say about it. So yeah, probably Nier Automata.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically you're throwing with the heavy hitters right at the front. But yeah,
I don't know.
The beauty of...
That's just me.
I mean, Nier Automata in particular is actually one of the other games that really... gave like the JRPG renaissance if you think about it. The design is basically eye candy. To the audio listeners, the best way I can describe it to the people who are listening right now on the Discord is let me pull out 2B here. I have my figure here, but I have a Nendoroid, so the Nendoroid isn't really like a good way. It's a good description of how amazing 2B is as characters. So let me check the one that I don't get canceled. Because there's so many fan art, to say the least. Okay, let's go with the safest one. So yeah, give me a sec, guys. This is primarily a very cultured image, for the lack of a better term. Okay, So I'm sharing my screen now. To anyone else listening on the audio, here is 2B. So yeah, she's hot, for the lack of a better term. White hair, very, let's say, I would say Victorian / Gothic dress in a way. And the cut in the side is very fucking high. To the point where you can't say it's borderline to the waist and the thighs. And I'm going to get flagged if I keep talking about this. So I'll stop sharing my screen. But yeah, 2B's character design, she's really amazing. She's beautiful. And there's a stupid trophy with regards to the PlayStation 4. A version that if you use your right analog stick and you basically change your camera angles and use check her
go for the lower angle.
Yeah, lower, if you check low enough, you'll get the trophy for it. But yeah, I mean, aside from the eye candy, mentioned philosophy is very strong in this game in general, where you get to see some different what's the term that I'm looking for? Trails of thought. Not necessarily trails of thought. It's more like way of thinking between different philosophers. Pascal was in here. I forgot the name of the female boss, where she kind of like dances throughout the boss fight in a way. I forgot her name, but she is also a philosopher. Actually, all of the androids there are philosophers, if you think about it.
There's even an NPC there that's named after a philosopher. It's somewhat French. Jean-Pierre something? I forgot. Yeah. Jean-Pierre, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry for us butchering French words. We don't speak French. We don't speak croissant. But at the side, there's so many things going on in that game, and it's so fun to the point that you don't get burnt out, like you said, right? Because even though it's primarily hack and slash, oftentimes when you say hack and slash, it's like the repetition is basically just pressing one button throughout the whole thing and see the model do work, right? But there's like combos and whatnot, and it mixes up the gameplay with the shoot 'em ups, right?
Yep. Oh yeah, it has bullet hell feature.
Yeah, I mean, did you enjoy that segment in particular with regards to Nier Automata?
Really?
Because some people are kind of burnt out by it to some degree. I'm not going to spoil what, because there's a particular character route where it's where the majority is the bullet hell part.
Oh yeah, it's the other one.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of theirs, but what do you think about the payoff for the game? Because you mentioned there's like multiple endings, right? I'm just gonna preface this to the others, because primarily there's like 4 or 5 main endings, if memory serves me right. There's 5. Primarily, you need to clear one, the rest is like you need to complete, you get all the weapons. It's like a staple in the Dragon Guard franchise, which is like the precursor to the Nier games. But you get one of the stupid endings in the game where you just, for some reason, you remove 2B's CPU, basically.
Oh yeah, right. Or you just let 2B eat sardines.
Yeah, there's a lot of stupid endings there, so don't stress about it. There's like the 5 main ones, but for newcomers who are listening to this podcast right now, do you think like the payoff? I mean, we both finished the game and we know the emotional payoff is there, but if you're coming in as a newcomer per se and you just tried this out because 2B hot, because most people who are looking at the box are this had that way of thinking, and I was one of them at some point. I mean, is it like, it's like going through the slog of clearing those five routes worth the payoff if for newcomers, if you think about it?
I think it is a bit challenging on that part. Perhaps for some people, it wouldn't click right away. But I think the real payoff there is the final ending. I think it is ending E. I don't know. Perhaps it supersedes your example earlier. Like, it's the emotional payoff. But honestly saying, it's the major payoff for me. It's the emotional, what do you call this? It's the emotional payoff. But other than that, I can say that, of course, we get to experience the story routes of the main characters, 9S, A2, of course, 2B. But more importantly, if you are someone who is very invested into narratives, you're probably after the endings of each character routes, right? But how to say this properly? I'm not sure about those people with just very particular with gameplay, but perhaps the gameplay aspect is something that I find a bit. How to put this? The gameplay aspect of the game is not really very spectacular for me, for the lack of a better term. But lacking in a sense, like, all you have to do is just hack your way and slash through things, right? But I know that we have a different opinion about this. I found the bullet hell a bit of a novelty in the game. It provides a bit of different perspective on how you want to solve things. In fact, the bullet hell aspect of the game gives you, like, it's like the puzzle aspect of the game. You have to survive through certain mechanics of the bullet hell, so in order to progress. It's actually also geared on the lore itself, right? So especially if we're talking about the other character who happens to be 9S, who's very particular with hacking. But that's basically it. I can just emphasize the all it think about is the it's basically the ending. The ending. It's ending E. I can't think of anything else. And perhaps if you want to know about the backstory of other characters, like along the way, you meet Devil and Popula. By the way, they're familiar characters if you played Nier Replicant. And as well as Emil.
Yeah.
Emil's ending, especially. If you want to get through with his side quest, you get to experience what happened or what's his contribution in the story, right? Or what? How do we connect the previous game, Nier Replicant, to this part? So I think that's one of the payoffs, I guess. Although I can say that this is a bit trivial, but to me it's a big thing already. Especially when I tried Emil's ending. Honestly, I can also attribute that to emotional payoff because when I tried that ending, I'm not going to spoil anything. Just that the only best thing that I can say about this is it really made me cry. That's what I can say. So yeah, it's a bit difficult for me to answer this question, honestly, because when you brought up the question, what's the payoff? That's all I can think about. So it became difficult when you said apart from the emotional payoffs. I can't think of anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, my bad. I mean, if you think about it, Nier, the franchise in general, is heavily banked upon the characters primarily, the way that the stuff that they went through. I get where you're coming from, where it's difficult as hell to talk about things without spoiling anything.
That too.
But yeah, one thing that I can also say, if you want to complete it, is primarily the ending. Ending E is, it's stupid if you think about it, but if you play the whole thing, it makes sense. And for the love of whatever religion you believe, whichever religious being you believe in, just listen to Weight of the World, and you can just imagine how. I know it's a pun in the name of the title itself. How heavy the whole thing is, how it piled up. But yeah, let's stop talking about Nier Automata, because at this point we're just gonna be telling the story, because it's an amazing game, but you kind of have to be at the right headspace as well, because there are a lot of depressing bits there.
Mm.
But yeah, let's move on from that.
Sorry to cut you off. If you don't mind, I could also recommend another game, although this is turn-based. And if you don't mind me recommending, I think I also mentioned this on the Gameslog podcast. Sea of Stars. It's much more easier to get into, especially if you want to try out the JRPG genre. It's turn-based, but it's a turn-based RPG that really gives you more engagement. The story itself, it reminds you of the old school classic Chrono Trigger, but at the same time providing the new take on narrative, moving forward with the formula. So yeah, that's all I can add.
That's good. I don't know. Sea of Stars is, how do I describe this? I don't know who is it primarily marketed for, to be honest. Mm. Because modern game design is there, but a good chunk of the people who bought it day one are pretty much us guys who were born during the 90s and enjoyed gaming during the 2000s.
That's us.
So yeah, it's a hard, I don't know, in a way it looks amazing. It kind of, the art style kind of reminds me of, to some degree, not necessarily it's a one-to-one match, but are you familiar with Steven Universe?
Steven Universe? I'm sorry? That's it?
Steven Universe from Cartoon Network.
Yep, familiar with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's just me, but the color grading, it's kind of like a one-to-one thing. And yeah, your other party member, I forgot the name.
Which one?
Chef, basically.
Oh, the chef, right.
Yeah. I don't know. He's kind of like a carbon copy of Steven. If you look at, if he's
a bit,
but yeah, I don't know. You mentioned it on the other podcast that it's like a sun. It's literally it has a Saturday cartoon vibes, which it pretty much is. But the story is a bit heavy if you think about it. It's a really fun game that I haven't finished yet. So, but I know what's the trajectory because it's pretty much like laid off, is what, right up midway, that you know what's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a fun game. I guess people can like get into it. The good thing about it is it's like accessible to across most platforms, right?
So far,
where can you play it?
So far, it's available on PlayStation 5. It's in fact, it's free on PS Plus Extra. Yeah, PS Plus Extra. And then it's also, if I'm not mistaken, it's also on Game Pass. I'm not sure about that. You can correct us, guys. It's also available on Nintendo Switch, and it's also on Steam. It's on Steam, right? Sea of Stars. Yes. Yeah, it's on Steam. Yeah. Basically, every platform I know.
Every platform aside from MOBA.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the good thing is, I mean, it's also not expensive compared to other titles that's out on the market right now. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Based on what I'm seeing and what I've felt so far, it kind of feels like a AAA experience, but without the price point.
Mm.
But then again, people have like different like perspectives or POVs to be exact when it comes to AAA games, because we have like the Soulsborne titles, Final Fantasy. So when you say AAA, it's usually that, but you kind of get like that AAA experience, mechanics, soundtrack wise and whatnot. And I'm sorry for some of the audio listeners right now if you have no idea what we're talking about, because sometimes I share like images here or images or whatnot in the Discord. So yeah, join the fucking Discord, guys, so you can get to see if we're sharing stuff like this. And there may be some cuts that I have to worry about at some point. So if you want to hear us draw, there's no paywall here. So yeah, feel free to join the Discord so you can like join the discussion and, you know, give your thoughts in chat as well. So yeah, go lang. But yeah, that aside, I mean, I'm just going to throw you I'm just going to throw you off here, because primarily we're just talking about like the JRPG inspired ones, right? would you consider, let's say, this is from one of our audiences, by the way. Would you consider Mortal Kombat games as RPGs?
It depends. If it presents a certain level of progression and stat building, at the same time, it gives you a bit of, I don't know, building a character, then perhaps I can consider it an RPG. But if MK or Mortal Kombat has that similar, what do you call this? If you're familiar with Dissidia Final Fantasy, right? It's a fighting game, but it has RPG elements. And perhaps I can consider Mortal Kombat an RPG if it has those elements. Perhaps.
Yeah.
That's the all. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some of the PS2 games back in the day have like, what's the term before? There are like stat building elements where you get to equip certain characters. You get to equip certain characters, you get to, there's like stat growth as well. I don't know if it's like a trope of the genre at this point where, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really do anything, but you just see stat number go up. It's like a common trope. I don't know if it's like, is it necessarily an RPG if you see those particular game mechanics like leveling up, stat progression, equipment and whatnot?
Perhaps, but for me, it also has to present a certain, to some extent, it has to present a certain narrative or something. Yeah, narrative. Something like Dissidia, right? If you remember Dissidia, you can progress through a storyline. Like you can do, say, for example, if you remember Duodecim, right? You can proceed with. First, you play as Lightning. Then you get to recruit these guys. Then you proceed to fight off the, I don't know. I forget the general whole story of this idea. But if you remember, it's basically Cosmos and Chaos, right? But yeah. Maybe it has to present that that certain narrative. I think I think Tekken presents a strong narrative, but it has more. It's more geared on fighting mechanics rather than stat building. As far as Tekken is concerned, I can see the what do you call this? The rank, right? You rank up. Yeah, that's it. But there, I'm not sure. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. But that's the only thing that I can see that gives you a sense of progression. Nothing more. Yeah.
Sorry for giving you for throwing you out there. I'm just curious because there are some like weird games. Primarily, they're like they're being presented as such, but they have like weird integration. Urguys is like one of them.
Which one?
Urguys from the PS. Urguys.
Mm.
The fighting game by Square Enix. There's like some dungeon / RPG elements there as well, and I kind of figured does it. Still counts an RPG, even though it's primarily a weird fighting game in general.
I haven't played that. So, yeah.
Don't bother. It's not worth the time, man. It's not worth the suffering is the best way I can put it.
I don't know
why people enjoyed that along with Tobal. I don't know if it's like a me thing. Or it's just me like being spoiled by playing like the really good fighting games in general. But yeah. Don't stress yourself with those. I'm just curious because there are like some weird integrations on certain games at some point. Yeah. Actually, there's like one Capcom game that has like one RPG element as well. I kind of forgot, but one of the characters you can use there is like a guy with a fucking lion head.
Which one?
There's like I'm gonna check what's included in the Capcom fighting game collection.
Fighting game.
Let me see here what games are included in here. There's like one game that has like RPG elements literally, but it's a fighting game in general. And what's the name? Stupid Scroll. It's taking forever. Darkstalk. Oh yeah, Red Earth.
Okay. Oh, that never heard of that.
Yeah, I mean it didn't came. Let me show my screen here so people can see here. That lion guy, basically. If you check out YouTube, it's like a fighting game, but there's like RPG elements and you can only use like what 4 characters at most. There's like stat progression, you can equip them and whatnot, but it's like a boss rush in a way. But when I say boss rush, you just fight bosses. There's no like random minions or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, sorry for throwing you off there. I'm just curious because some people might be style of gameplay. Because when you say RPG, it doesn't necessarily have to mean like the old school console exclusive ones. One of our audiences here, Cancer, brought out a few ones that are good as well. These are primarily MMOs. But the thing about MMOs, in my opinion, is there's too much grinding. I mean, back in the day, it's like early to the mid-2000s. It's okay because it's like the new thing. You get to see some new stuff, killing like raiding bosses and whatnot. But it's too RNG and grindy to me to the point where, I don't know, if it's just me getting older or there's like way more games that are like better to my own pace because, you know, having a day job sucks, but we're not all Mr. Beast or we're not rich or that random guy who just won the other day for some reason. Good on you, guy. Better family, thanks. Congrats. Another member earned millions. But weird joke aside. Yeah, I mean, those kinds of games are okay though. I mean, if you have like the time and because you play MMOs at some point, you're about to meet people, right? That's like everyone's MMO experience. Play, meet new, join a guild, party up with people, get to interact with them via chat. If you're lucky, maybe you get to hang out with them. I don't know what is the culture overseas or whatnot, but usually the Philippines, especially during when I play, what's the RF during my RF Online and Ragnarok era days, we get to do this thing called like GB. That sounded wrong. GB something like gangbang. What's that term I'm looking for? We just meet up basically in a computer shop somewhere, hang out after let's say like a guild war or whatnot. We go to a different place, we drink, hang out, get to know our guild members, and from there there's like a certain camaraderie. Have you played MMOs back in the days with Sir Teach, or you have no MMO experience rather?
Actually, my only MMO experience was Ragnarok Online. Basically, I was able to play it 2 years later. I think Ragnarok Online came out what year? 2003, right? So I was able to play 2005. Actually, way back 2003, I was starting to hear this. What's this Ragnarok Online? So, as far as video games are concerned, I was only familiar with say for example, yeah, console gaming. My only gaming experience was PlayStation 1, Famicom or NES, right? Yeah. But the whole concept of MMO was new to me back then. So I was like, "Oh, so you're teaming up, you're joining up, you're partying up, you're hunting monsters down." Yeah, that's cool, but at certain point, I wasn't enticed back then until such time that I got to see the game for myself and was like, this game is actually addicting. So when I give it a go, wow, it was actually a rabbit hole. It literally and figuratively destroyed my life back then. But yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, we got to some point in our lives where we experienced those. And yeah, we got scolded by our parents. I know. Kaka-computer mo yan, something like that. Or basically, you even have these evil thoughts of stealing money from your parents' wallets just to I don't know, play at a random computer shop just to play the game, right? So back then, computer or rather internet connection is a luxury. Not everyone had the luxury of owning or having internet connection at home. So most of us experienced MMOs in computer shops. So it's pretty much Ragnarok Online. There were a few MMOs that popped up that time. One was Ran Online, Flife, RF Online. I think if I'm not mistaken, there's also Tantra, MU or something. But as far as
Online as well.
Yeah, that too, right? But I think as far as MMOs are concerned, my heart remained with Ragnarok. To me, it was like, I cannot commit to another MMO. I already had game commitments or something. I play a lot of games back then already. I have my PlayStation 1. So to add up another game to my lifestyle, I don't know. Maybe it's too much for me. even for someone my age back then as a high schooler, it's too much. I enjoyed Ragnarok Online. I met a lot of friends. I made friends. I made enemies as well. My account got hacked to some extent. But yeah, these MMOs also taught me lessons: resource management, not trusting. Also taught me not to trust people easily, something like that. It basically taught us self-management. Yeah. So yeah, this is my only experience with MMO. As far as other games, I am basically just the backseating type. A lot of my friends played Gunbound, but yeah, I was just in the sidelines. I'm just, that's a nice game, but yeah, I want to play Ragnarok Online. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those of you who don't know what it's like during the online era in the Philippines, not sure if it was a thing back then. Keylogging was a thing in
computer cafes. Oh, that too! That's how hackers get your passwords, guys!
Yeah, so those, basically, back then, where, you know, online wallets weren't a thing, and you have to meet halfway in a computer cafe or whatnot. If the other guy gets early, they kinda have the tendency to, you know, install Keylogger in a particular PC, and you point, and the other guy tells you that, yeah, use this PC because the game is only installed there. In a way, and aside from losing money and, you know, losing your item, your account has been hacked. So usually they bid it to the highest seller, buyer or whatnot. It's one of those things that we kinda has given us like a good feel of the whole scamming thing.
I made a comeback though. What I did back then was I pretended to be scammed. So I acted like I removed my gear. Like I put up a status like, "Help, I got scammed." So random strangers just gave me money, give me items. And yeah, pretty much that. I was able to bounce back.
Yeah, I mean, if you have like friends who can like help you bounce back, that's great. But oftentimes you're on your own in this.
Yeah.
This kind of game. But I don't know. Maybe that's the beauty of it. If you get to build like certain keys and whatnot. So I mean, if you're gonna be recommending like an MMO to people nowadays, if they want to get like a feel of the whole dungeon raiding, the community feels, and you know, guild wars and whatnot. I know you haven't played for a while, but we have the internet nowadays. You get to see some reviews, maybe from a certain influencer, or maybe you get to see that it looks amazing, but you don't have the time to commit or whatnot. If there's like one game in particular that you would like to recommend for people that's like a modern MMO, which one would it be?
I'm not sure if I'm in the right position to recommend a modern MMO because
that's okay. I mean, it's like an eye test thing, like where you see it for the first time, saw some gameplay, kinda like went into YouTube and check how it goes out and whatnot. At first glance thing that say, yeah, I'll try this kind of MMO.
Okay. So just a disclaimer. As mentioned earlier, I was only able to play Ragnarok Online, but I got introduced to a few MMOs. Some friends also play this, and I think it's also an MMO that actually redeemed itself from the ashes. So if I'm going to recommend something, it's Final Fantasy XIV. Knowing the pedigree of Naoki Yoshida, Yoshi P himself actually made this game, or rather turned this game around, right? So it has a lot of expansions right now. I know I'm not in the right position to recommend this because I personally haven't played this, but I can. I think it's. I'm not sure if it's appropriate to say this, but knowing the pedigree of Yoshi P, yeah, it's something that looks promising. It's also perhaps from the testimonials of my friends who also play this, I can say that this is also worth your time. Not only it presents a modern take on the Final Fantasy franchise, but I also saw a few footages from the game that also has a bit of nostalgia factor. In fact, I was able to see there One footage of a boss fight against Kefka. I know, Sir Kage, you're very familiar. You're very fond of Final Fantasy VI, right? So I was able to see one boss fight of, I think it's a boss raid, a party boss raid, and they were fighting Kefka. It was awesome. I was like, oh boy, I want to try this game. But yeah, in my current headspace right now, I don't think I can commit to this kind of MMO. I'm more about a console gamer. But yeah, for those who want to give the genre or the MMO a try, I think Final Fantasy XIV is a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I'm actually in the same headspace with regards to MMO. If there's an MMO nowadays I would like to recommend, it's Final Fantasy XIV as well.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, for the sole reason that you can get to play it for free until you hit like a certain level. I believe it was the 50, cap is 60.
60, 60, all right.
50 or 60, somewhere along those lines. And from there, you can kind of like pay for the rest of the game, be it the expansions or whatnot. There's multiple job tasks that you can play as. And the game went out initially, it's pretty bad. That's why they have like a Realm Reborn thing where they rebooted the series, and if I was a company, I'd be crying because I've lost millions or maybe billions at that point.
Yeah.
Square Enix nowadays. But that's not talk about what's happening within companies right now, because I feel sad for Square, but at the same time, it's their fucking fault. Who would want a Parasite Eve NFT? Fuck them.
Oh yeah, but they're into NFTs.
Yeah, that's the thing that I hate. Yeah, I hate what they're doing right now. Oh, they're doing great at the same time. They're doing stupid things that I don't know why they think it's a great idea. But yeah, if you have like want to try an MMO in your computer, or if you have a console primarily, you can play this on console as well.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy XIV is probably one of the best MMO experiences you can play. There's a lot of cooldowns there, and aside from that, the boss rush, I mean, the raids there are amazing. Sir Teach mentioned it earlier. You get to fight Kefka there in one of the dungeons. Yes. You get to hear soundtracks from the games that they kind of featured on. So, Dancing Mad is going to be there. I think I'll try to put the audio here in the post-editing. I'm not sure if we get flagged for it, but I'll just try to put in, like, a few seconds. So yeah, I'm gonna pause for a bit and you get to listen 5 seconds of it in this part. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoy that snippet of Dancing Mad, and maybe you get inspired to play the old school Final Fantasies. I'm just gonna be cheating if I say the pixel remaster is included in here, because it's like a different experience altogether. But we kind of like screwed ourselves by putting a baseline for which console generation. But I'd say it's not I'm gonna recommend one. It's not it's an RPG, but it feels like an MMO. So yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, everyone who has a Switch knows about this game, but if for some reason you're not familiar with this game, I highly suggest you.
Am I right? I think I know this one. Does it start with X?
It's Xenoblade, man.
I knew it.
I don't know if this is just me being a fanboy of Monolith Soft at this point.
Yeah,
but the company went through hell. Its roots went through hell. I'm just gonna give you guys like I'm not sure if I'm padding too much time in this podcast. Maybe I'll post. But to those of you who are here right now, I want to know a little bit of history with regards to gaming. Let's just say the founder of Monolith Soft is one of the guys who basically helped create the earlier Final Fantasies 1-6. He pitched the idea for Final Fantasy 7.
And got shut down.
Which is a bit too narrative. Yeah, and got shut down. But Square Enix, the premise was good enough to make a standalone game. And thus, Xenogears was born. Xenogears. Yep. And Xenogears has way too many concepts that it doesn't have the time and budget for it to deliver. So the second half is like just a slideshow for the most part. But in that game, you get to see different... there's like different forms of religion being mentioned there. There's symbolism. Atheism is being discussed in certain degrees. I can't stress enough to say you should give that game a shot, to be honest. If you have like an emulator, you can plug in the controller on your PC or whatnot. For the love of God, play that game and get to know why I'm like trying to not spoil things right now. But yeah, it didn't sold well back in the PS1 era. So the guys who made that game moved to Bandai Namco, and Xenosaga was created. Originally, it was pitched as a six games series. It was originally planned as a six games, but since the first game didn't sold well, I mean, it passed enough to make a sequel, but sometimes publishers have like really high expectations to the point that because of the low number they got for the first game, it was cut in half, so they have to cram the story within those three titles. So yeah, after that, Monolith Soft was dropped off, and now Nintendo picked them up, and thank God they did, because they gave them all of the time and resources that they could, because they really trusted this developer. And the end result is we have Xenoblade Chronicles. I mean, if you think about it, I'm just going to try to not spoil things, but collectively, if you think about it, it's like your typical shonen kind of thing, where you're kind of like a chosen one, but the story revolves around you, obviously, but there's so many twists and turns that it kind of subverts your expectations about the whole gameplay-wise. The reason why I say it's kind of like an MMO is because you get to move around. It's not your typical turn-based RPG where you have like this bar that you look and you have to wait until the bar fills up so you can do your turn. You can move around. Your character attacks automatically. But the difference is that there's like skills that you can equip and there's like some cooldowns so you don't have to spam your skills. And oftentimes there's like some there's some positional things where you do extra damage. Sometimes it has added effects like lessens the armor, stuns and whatnot. And you're stuck in this gameplay loop where you don't get bored of the battle because your focus is always there. And as for the story, I would say Xenoblade 1 is the best story overall across the three mainline games. Correct me if I'm wrong, or if you have like personal opinions, please let me know in Spotify because we have like that content bit at that part. But the story is amazing and it's pretty heavy to the point where you weren't expecting these kinds of things. And all I can say is I kind of mentioned what you were going to be dealing with on Xenogears. Expect kind of the same things on Xenoblade Chronicles, but it's more refined in a way. If you have a fucking Switch, please buy it now. You can actually play whatever entry, number entry you can play and get into it. It's a great it has different experiences or whatever. There's like different tastes and feels, but the combat is pretty much the same. Story and other parts are like different on each of their own. I would say the best of both worlds would, aside from story and combat, would probably be Xenoblade Chronicles 3, but 2, as I would say, arguably has the best combat, especially if you play the DLC, which is Torna the Golden Country. Now, if you don't have a Switch, chances are, if you're just a random listener, maybe you have like just a phone or maybe a entry grade laptop, but sometimes entry grade laptops can like emulate Nintendo DS or 3DS at some points, then you can please. at least you can play Xenoblade Chronicles 1 and you can emulate it on, let's say, your phone. Because to my surprise, I'm just using what, a cheap Yumi DG A9 Pro. I'm not sponsored by them, and it's stupid of me to mention the model and the brand. But I can play 3DS games on this. And I've just replayed Radiant Historia Perfect Chronicle here. So if you can play hard games and Shin Megami Tensei 4 on your phones, you give yourself a shot to play Xenoblade Chronicles. And I know there's a lot of fetch quests there. Now I remember why I hate the game. there's way too many fetch quests there. But the payoff combat and whatnot is definitely a must play. And if you happen to have a Switch, you give yourself this experience because it's one of those narratives that really latches on to you. I kind of cried in the end, and 3 is the one that really made me cry for like 3-5 minutes. I'm not going to spoil anything, but damn, the narratives in this particular franchise is amazing. So yeah, feel free or choose your poison, whichever character designs you like. Just go for it, man. Sorry for the really long tangent for Xenoblade Chronicles. Sir Teach, your thoughts about Xenoblade Chronicles, if it's like an entry-grade RPG for people to get into?
If I'm going to recommend among the trilogy, I'm going for 1. Personally, I played 1 with Shulk's story. The combat of 2 is more, it's much more complex. I don't think people will get right into it right away. With Xenoblade Chronicles 1, I think the combat there is much more simpler. The story is a bit also easy to digest, right? In fact, I remember recommending... Yeah, I think at least for me, at least that's how I look at it. I don't know. But I find it much more easy to digest than compared to the other Xenoblade. Granted, I'm not yet finished with Xenoblade Chronicles 3. But I actually got my wife into playing Xenoblade 1, and she loved it. She had no prior experience of what this game is all about. Even the gameplay itself, like, oh, this is actually new. Because we got used to turn-based and action RPGs, right? But with I don't know how do we categorize the battle system of Xenoblade? It's like you just basically lock onto a target, then just get near the enemy and just let it do its thing, right? But on top of that, yeah,
I'm gonna cut you there for a bit. If you played Final Fantasy 12 we talked about heavily earlier. Yeah. Final Fantasy 14. The combat is literally like that.
Perhaps I can recommend Xenoblade 1. Also, I think while you can play the games on the, each game standalone without worrying too much about the story, I think, in my own opinion, I think you will appreciate 2 and 3 if you were able to finish or at least play Xenoblade 1. At least that's how I look at it. And I don't know. If I'm going to compare in terms of emotional payoff, I think they just at least 1 and 2 in my experience, they're just a bit on par with each other. But
wait until you play 3.
Yeah, I'm bracing myself for it. Anyway, but I think 1 has a bit heavier emotional payoff than 2 for me. I don't know. It's just me. But more than anything, I think the voice acting of 1 is better than 2. That's it. I cringe at the voice acting of 2. Honestly, Rex is...
Are we talking about the English voice acting here?
The English voice acting, yes. Yes.
I don't understand why they went with the Irish accent.
Yeah, but in terms of the first Xenoblade game, in fact, I'm familiar with the voice actor for Shulk. I think it's Adam Howden. Just to give a trivia, he's the voice actor for... which character was it from Dragon Age? Yeah, Anders from Dragon Age. So, Adam Helden performed well as a voice actor of Shulk. In fact, each time, I know, I'm not trying to spoil here. I'm going to stop myself there. But if you can hear him scream, oh my god, I don't know. My chest just hurts. I don't know. That's how I can describe the performance here, at least in 1, compared to 2, at least. Yeah, that's also one point of Xenoblade 1 being better, at least as an entry point. It's not to say that Xenoblade 2 is a terrible game. It's actually good. But I think in order for anyone new to the series to appreciate this series itself, one is a good entry point. Yeah.
All good, all good. I mean, like, I'm not sure. Correct me if I'm wrong for this anyone, but I think Monolith Soft in particular is like they design the games in a way, whichever numbered entry you get into is like a good entry point. But yeah, sometimes there's like one of those games that you kind of have to go to the beginning to get like a feel for the entire franchise. Yeah, for the entire franchise, I guess. I mean, some elements get carried over, and 3 is like the perfect balance between the two. But I don't know, man. I'd say 2 is, I don't know, combat wise, I'd say 2 is like the best one. The elemental burst there is like something that you kind of have to get by trial and error. But when you get it, you get to see damage by the millions.
Yeah.
And for it. Especially, they refine the combat in the DLC. Mm-hmm. Country, so the emotional payoff there is a different one.
Yeah,
I see that's the depression DLC, but I won't talk about it. you were saying, Sir Teach, you were saying something.
It's not really to say that the battle system of 2 is terrible. I think, in fact, among the Xenoblade games I played, I enjoyed 2 the most. Especially on the part that you mentioned, that you can ditch millions of numbers on those, I don't know, with those what do you call this? Those elemental bursts, right? But on the other hand, I don't think people new to the series would be able to appreciate this. It's way too complex, in my opinion. I think I think that's my justification why I chose 1 as a good entry point. But yeah, once they play 1, they can get straight into 2, and wow, they're gonna love how innovative the combat system of 2 is. So yeah, that's my adding point.
Also, this is just like a personal gripe, preferences by me. Please don't use the English voice acting. Mm-hmm. I'm just not a fan of the very British and Irish voice actors there. I mean, some are okay, but Rex in particular is something that I don't want to hear all over, especially during combat, because during combat, they loop the audio tracks, so you get to hear him say one thing over and over again, and it really makes my ears bleed.
Yeah.
But let's try something weird, because since we talk about the 3 Xenoblade games, but not in great depth. Let's talk about the character designs. If you're gonna describe the character designs in one word for each main game, how would you describe it?
How
would you describe one?
I think it's kind of unique for me. I'm not sure. Are we talking about the older one or the remastered? Because the remastered one has a different feel to it.
Either one, because depends on what people have access to. I say both are okay. For the old one, what's your description? Art style? Sure.
I want to say it's unique. I haven't seen a JRPG with that kind of art style, at least. It doesn't remind you, at least it doesn't appear anime-ish as compared to the second one. The second one is full of weeb shit. That's what I can say about it. But okay. The first one, it's unique. That's also one. I don't know how to say this. Probably that's also one of the reasons why I want to recommend the first one. It has a unique art style. It doesn't appear generic. No offense to Masatsugu Saito, the artist of 2, but his anime art style appears generic for me at least. One is unorthodox, for the lack of a better term. I like the character design of Fiora, Shulk. They appear a bit of pseudo-Westernish with a bit of Japanese feel to it. Something like that. That's the best description I can get. It's a bit pseudo-Westernish with a bit of Japanese touch. Yeah.
I don't know. The 2021s is like anime. Yes. I dropped the art style here on Discord. I probably use this as a thumbnail art. Maybe, I don't know, but between the two, I guess it's more like, it kind of reminds me of Kojima's art style.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, heavy lines, the oils there as well.
Yeah.
But the definitive edition rather anime as hell.
Yeah.
I know it's like the light color here is a good indicator of that. I'm not sure if you can like switch between the portraits within the game or you're just stuck with the anime art style.
You're stuck with the anime art style.
You don't have the option to choose.
Yeah. For the remastered only. If you want to really have the feel of the older one, I think you're going to go for the 3DS version or the Wii version for that matter.
Ah, fuck that. I'll just play the Switch. I prefer the combat there on the... I prefer the combat on the Switch. Speaking of Switch, you can emulate the Switch on Android. So if you have like a decently powered cell phone. We are not encouraging piracy, but if you have the money and find like a copy of this game, if you don't have the money to shell out for a Switch, there you go.
If you support the game, buy it.
Yeah. But whatever floats your boat, guy. I mean, Xenoblade is probably, if you're like forced to play one, the first game is like a good entry point at this point. But yeah. Well, to my surprise, it's been an hour already. Holy shit. time flies when you have like discussions like this. We get random back and forths and whatnot. But we're just gonna be talking about let's just give one more recommendation before we wrap things up because I don't want to eat too much of your time. But I mentioned we won't talk about remasters, but considering for the past two to three years, games from the SNES era up to the PS2 and PS3 are getting remasters, basically.
Ah, okay.
So, out of the influx of the games from the past that are making comebacks, which one would you recommend for newcomers to the genre to try?
Okay. I think the only game that I can consider the true remaster, right? I think I'm going to recommend this game because for me, it's the epitome of a true remastered game. There's a lot of remastered games that I don't know. It feels more of a port than a remaster. So yeah, I'm not so hot on that. So for my recommendation on remasters, I'd like to pitch in Crisis Core Reunion Final Fantasy VII. If you see the level, for me it's the epitome of a remaster. For one thing, it really didn't change the overall feel of the original PSP version, but at the same time, it gives you a fresh take of the visuals, as well as preserving the original gameplay story and whatnot. Although I'm not sure if there were things that were added. I'm not sure. Would we consider adding more features to the game a remaster? I don't know. But perhaps this is one thing that I'm not too confident to share about this game. But if you really want to experience a revisiting of this game from the PSP era, it's Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core Reunion. It almost makes you feel like you're also playing Final Fantasy VII Remake. And it's also good to...
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, it's also... Yeah, if you look at the graphics, right? So it also reminds you... Oh, yeah, it looks like Final Fantasy VII. But if you want to experience Zack's story... more fresh visuals, if you will. Right. So, give this game a try. Although the game basically plays the same from the PSP era, I tried the game just not too long ago. I will admit, not much was added except for a few. Things or tweaks. In fact, the thing that I like about Crisis Core Reunion is that they removed the the annoying notification on the DMW wave bar, the slot machine thing. Because way back in the PSP, it's so annoying. Remember each time you fight.
I mean, it's still annoying nowadays.
Right, like it interrupts you. Right, like activating combat mode, power surge. Like, come on, give me a break. Or something, there's one thing that wasn't changed in the game. In fact, although, granted, you can skip through those, but random cutscenes play in the middle of the fight. I think that's the only nitpick that I can bring about this game. But overall, this is my recommendation. But this is my recommendation about True Remaster. That if we're going through the rules, right? So yeah, Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion. That's for me.
Yeah, I get the immersion breaking bit because sometimes if you're like way into the combat and all of a sudden you get to see cutscene where a random helicopter drops by and just starts shooting everyone, it really throws you off at times. I mean, I guess it's like a feature back then just for, I don't know, maybe Easter eggs for the guys who played Final Fantasy VII and by extension the mobile game that came out.
Ever Crisis.
I think it was Ever Crisis. And not everyone got to play that games because Japanese only. But I don't know, it's just an Easter egg, I guess. For me, out of all recent remasters, there's so many games there that it's really difficult to pinpoint. I mean, each have their own merits, basically. I would say probably try the Persona ones so you can get like a feel of what came before the masterpiece, which is Persona 5 Royal. I know I'm sucking Atlas's dick here at this point, but if you guys seen by the stuff that I post on Instagram and my social media, and if you've seen my OC, it screams Persona. So any haters here, fuck you guys. You should expect this at some point. But aside from the expected, remark, I'd say, what's the best remaster? I don't know if this is cheating or I'm just baiting out at this point, but I would say, and this with confidence, probably Odin Sphere this year. Because story, graphics, and UI-wise, it's pretty much the same as when it came out on the PS2. I would say the only difference that I would say that makes it different is slight differences in the combat system in a way. Because back then, it's not what it is on the PS4 port where you can assign certain moves on certain command body combinations where you can like combo, make your combos and whatnot. But I don't know if, and it's probably like a good gateway game for a certain developer for you to get hooked on the stuff that they've made. Because I know we're talking about RPGs, but we kind of touched upon earlier that does it have to be action or turn-based and whatnot. Most of the games that VanillaWare shelled out are either beat-em-up games, visual novels, or strategy RPGs. For Odin Sphere this year, it's kind of like a beat-em-up, but it has RPG elements where you level up, have certain mission requirements, routes, perfect endings, and whatnot. And this is, I would say, probably a good entry point. The art style is amazing. It's not as, depends on where you view from, as offensive as the other VanillaWare games, Dragon's Crown. But yeah, Western people are offended by it. But because of the whole Twitter war thing that went on, the game had more sales, so I don't know. Fuck that guy from Kotaku. I forgot what your name is, but fuck you. But thank you in a way, because of what you did, VanillaWare had more sales.
Well, publicity is still publicity. Good or bad.
Yeah, true. But yeah, if there's like one particular game that you want to try, which is a remaster / remake, I guess this is where the lines get intertwined between the two. Probably VanillaWare, Odin Sphere. Otherwise, I would say Persona 4 Golden. I mean, it's not my favorite entry in the franchise. For obvious reasons, because I'm waiting for the day that the Persona 2 duology comes out. If they make a remake of that game, fuck Persona 5. Because Persona 2 is my all-time, it's the greatest of all time for the franchise. I talk about it in the Gameslog podcast with how bad the PS1 game is. Gameplay-wise, because it's so old school that people won't enjoy it as much, especially people who don't have the patience nowadays. But if you can slog through it, the narrative is the best one. And especially if you played Eternal Punishment, where you don't play as teenagers because you have a full cast adults there, and they have real adult problems. Especially, I started playing the game when I was like my late teens, so it kind of hit me hard there. That's why I keep bitching about Persona 2 being the best one. But that's about me. Odin Sphere for now, but if there's like a remake of Persona 2, fuck Odin Sphere as much as I love Vanilla. But yeah, before we round things up, Sir Teach, we mentioned a lot of games, but if you're like forced to play on a single platform, which one would it be so you can have like get the best of everything?
I think it's obvious at this point. I think it would be Nintendo Switch. For a few years now, Nintendo Switch has been the home to a lot of JRPGs. Not to mention Nihon Falcom titles, Square Enix, and a whole lot more, right? It's basically... my friends and I were joking about this. Basically, the Nintendo Switch became the home for new JRPGs at that point. Although, yeah, right now it started to slow down, but... Looking at my collection of JRPGs, wow, I don't think I'm able to play all of them if I'm given enough time. I don't know. So yeah, perhaps it would be the Nintendo Switch because, of course, the portability. I don't mind really watering down a few things in terms of performance and graphics. I'm not very particular with that thing. The important thing for me is I get to experience this game. Although, granted, I own a PS5. But yeah, on the go gaming, JRPGs, talk to me. Nintendo Switch.
I see. Fair points. But as for me, I don't know if I'm cheating at this point, but if there's like one particular platform that you can play, probably get a Steam Deck at this point.
Oh, well, I'm about to get one, by the way. Probably soon. I don't know.
So hear me out, guys. The reason why I said get a Steam Deck. Because you can primarily play all of the stuff that we mentioned.
Yeah.
Well, emulation is a thing.
Right.
So if you live in the Philippines, if you're listening and you're listening to this and you have money to burn or say that I won this in a lottery.
Yeah.
Or raffle because Christmas parties are a thing here.
Mm-hmm.
Get a Steam Deck. You can emulate up to PS3. 3DS emulation is great there, and if you don't have a Switch but mm-hmm. plan to buy one,
mm-hmm.
Yuzu emulator exists on the stick, so you can play Switch games there. Again, I'm not hating on Nintendo here. I have a lot of Switch games physical as well,
mm-hmm.
but if I'm gonna be the guy who wants to make like the bag for my buck, definitely get a Steam Deck at this point. They're not as expensive as they are when they came out. And you can like expand the memory so you can put like 2 TB SSD there. And you have a huge collection so you can play the PS2 ones as well, because the PS2 is an amazing JRPG powerhouse if we talk about it. Okay, I know I've extended this long enough, but since we mentioned PS2 and some of the PS1, if you can like recommend one PS2 game for people to enjoy, which one would it be?
I'm also going to admit at this point that PS2 is also my blind spot. But I get Yeah. My PlayStation experience basically started from PlayStation 1. PS2 and PS3, I literally skipped those. In fact, even 4, PS4. But I think I'm cheating at this point because most of the PlayStation 4 games I experienced I was able to experience them on my Steam library. So yeah. But yeah, going back to your question, PlayStation 2 game, that's actually a tough take. Perhaps I'm going to just mention the few things I played. I'm not sure if I'm being just biased because of the games I played. Probably I'm giving Xeno Saga series a go. Going by my roots of Xeno Gears, I was able to enjoy Xeno Saga to some extent. Granted, it's very dark. It's not for everyone. But give the game a chance.
The Xeno games, aside from Chronicles, are always dark.
Yeah, well, granted, when they transferred to Nintendo, they got toned down a bit. Like, oh yeah, you gotta make this game a bit friendly to most players. But yeah, it's still a bit dark. But compared to Xeno Saga, it's dark. Yeah.
Yeah, fair point. As for me, if there's like one particular RPG that I want to try for the PS2, I would probably say Suikoden 5. It's the swan song for the franchise. It didn't deserve the fate that it get because fuck Konami. Giving us here real quick here. Yeah, I mean, they, aside from making the transition to Pachinko, they saw the sales from weren't as good. So for the localized version where it's English, basically, they only released, I think, 200,000 copies. But 5 was a huge improvement from 4. The party system was went back to 6. There's like formations and whatnot. The story is amazing. The combat is amazing. Arguably the one of the solid ones, though 2 kinda beats it up a notch. So yeah, if there's like a game you play play Suikoden 5. Wild Arms suck on the PS2. Fuck you, Kevin. And that's my ghost, by the way.
Oh, hi.
Wild Arms sucks.
He says, how dare
nobody
you?
Nobody likes the geo thing where you move your party to a certain block and they get elemental benefits from it. No fuck. And this is why I like having chat here, because I get to see stupid shit like this. And no, your take is shit. But yeah, probably Wild Arms 3. I prefer 3 over 4. It's more fun. As far as the downfall of Wild Arms, in my opinion.
As far as Wild Arms games are concerned, I was only able to play 1 and 2. Sad to say.
Yeah, 2 is good. I would say, I don't know. I guess 1 is better overall. 2, kind of improved on it. But 3 is like, I would say the epitome of the old school Wild Arms. I think there's like a PC port of it, but yeah, I don't know. You try 3. 3 is fun for me. It's the best one out of all the numbered ones. But that's just my opinion here. But yeah, closing thoughts, Sir Teach. What is your closing thoughts about the whole topic?
Yeah, JRPGs.
Aside from English is hard.
I'm sorry. Aside from what?
Aside from English is hard.
Well, I'm glad I was able to breeze through this. But yeah, overall thoughts. JRPG is actually, I don't know. Yeah. Way back in the 90s, I think it's a thing. In fact, 90s or early 2000s, consider that those times as the golden age of JRPGs. Nowadays, it's a bit of a niche, given that gaming is more popular on mobile right now. But JRPGs, I don't think they haven't died down. In fact, as you mentioned earlier, we saw a renaissance of great JRPGs. Persona 5 for one, like, it's really holding its ground, right? And we see a lot of remasters and even newer IPs, especially not only in the newer IPs, we also get to experience even Western developers are attempting their hand on creating or recreating the experience. I'm talking about Sea of Stars for that matter. Yeah, I think it's very pretty much alive, and I think it also deserves a spotlight, especially for new gen gamers. I really appreciate some younger gamers, especially when they also appreciate JRPGs. For context, my day job is a teacher. I'm actually I teach in senior high, and I previously had a student who is a very avid fan of Final Fantasy. So when I asked him, which Final Fantasy are you playing? Oh yeah, I'm playing Final Fantasy 15. So right, so you're a fan of Final Fantasy. So I was able to recommend back the classics, and holy cow, he was able to appreciate the older titles as well. So yeah, I think I really this is something that deserves more attention. In fact, that's one of our rationale in our own podcast, namely Backlog na naman, because we're at this point, right? Especially in our day, in our age right now, we're very busy adults. Pretty much. How to put this? Yeah, we also take turns in get. It's a bit of a challenge to recommend the genre, especially on the game itself, or the genre itself is very, very long, averaging 40 hours to 100. But yeah, 15. Going back to 15, I think this is the modern take of JRPGs. I think new gen gamers can get into the newer ones. Then I don't know, perhaps a bit of spiral method or spiraling method would do the thing, so that they can also be immersed in other games. So overall thoughts. It's pretty worth a shot. It's not dying down. Far from it. We still have a lot of titles coming out. So I think they can go with the modern ones. Then who knows? If they appreciate the older ones, then much better. Yeah.
Fair point. Fair point. The thing about this discussion as well is that it doesn't have to be like limited to JRPGs as well. I mean, there are some amazing The Witcher is probably one of the best works out there, along with Baldur's Gate. So if you are like itching for that fantasy style but Western take on things, probably Baldur's Gate is like a good game to get into, especially the old school ones. But if like world building, lots of reading is your thing, then don't bother with those. Witcher is probably the best one, though arguably please don't play it if you have parents living with you, because the sex scenes there are gonna be the things that's gonna give them heart attacks, as I've heard from one of my friends who played it in this house, in their household.
Or, they can just lock down. They can just lock their doors.
Yeah, that's a problem. If the only place that you can play is the living room, but third world problems. Yeah, RPGs is like a good experience. Oftentimes, you play as the self-insert character for you to fully immerse. Sometimes you get to play certain roles that you just follow someone's story, but you get to feel the experience and the journey that you go through there. And that's like the selling point of playing role-playing games. Hopefully, the winded stuff that we talk about and our recommendations kind of help you, you know, get a better idea of which game or games that you should try out on your list and play at your own leisure. You don't have to like really pressure yourself to get into it or try to finish it, because if some things don't click with you, it doesn't, man. And that's what I got with, what's the thing that made me cry at the time, that made me rage quit? Natural Doctrine. I almost finished the damn game, but fuck that shit. But yeah, Sir T, just want to say thank you for your time, and it was really nice talking to you again for this kind of like an extension of the Games Log episode, and a bit more expanded upon in a way. Do you have anything to promote or whatnot?
All right, so allow me to promote our own podcast. So that's Backlog na naman Budulcast. You can find us on Spotify, on Google Podcast, and as well as Apple Podcast. Yeah, and Spotify. And then you can also follow us on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/backlog na naman. And also on Instagram, you can find us with the handle name BNN Budulcast. Same with Threads. And on X, that's twitter.com/backlogdanaman. And do also, while you follow us on Spotify, you can also take the time to listen to our own episodes. We have a mixture of our flagships. We have game recommendations, whether it's mainstream or hidden gems. We also have guidance episodes where we just discuss random video game topics. And with regards to the smaller segment that my wife, Atticas, hosts, that's Huhu Time, a Genshin Cast episode. For those who are still playing Genshin Impact, you can also check out their episodes. So while you're at it, you can also leave a comment or feedback with our episodes as well. So yeah, that's it.
Yes, nice and concise. But yes, for me, social-wise, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Gagaspace. I'm also on What else? I also have a podcast. You're listening to it right now. That's also Kage Space. I also have a comic podcast with my co-host, who is here right now, Kevin from the Itis ng Weeb podcast, called Buzzwords Podcast, where we pretty much talk or rant about things in a comedy kind of way. So if you kind of like dry, semi-witty humor or things that would cause us cancellation online, feel free to check that out. If you want to keep the lights on or support the podcast financially, if you have the means to do so, we have a Ko-fi. We have a Ko-fi. It's kind of like Patreon, but it's more flexible for subscription base. And you can also donate what you feel amount. I'm gonna be putting a random stretch code here because some of our other listeners on the other podcast keep on telling me that they'll give me, I think it was 5,000 or 6,000 pesos if I get a haircut and if I do it, if I stream it live. So if you're watching this and see how long my hair is, that's why there's that. So when you hit that goal, maybe I'm going to be doing it, but I'm going to be increasing the amount because it took me, what, I think 3 or 4 years for me to get my hair this long. So there's going to be a price for it, guys. Fuck you. So yeah, that aside, this podcast is also sponsored by Gusto Phil Tex-Mex. Gusto Phil Tex-Mex is basically, the best way I can put it, is a Filipino fusion with Mexican food. So, because obviously you can get the chilies and spices from Mexico because import is going to be expensive. They kind of made it in a way that you get the same taste, but with that Filipino taste that makes you say, wow, this is worth the travel, basically. So I'll be putting I'll be putting their links in the description below as well. Feel free to check out their free branches here in Quezon City, in Banaue. I think it was one in Visayas, and there's another one, and I think in North Caloocan. So check them out. Feel free to mention Kage Space or Buzzwords brought us here whenever they put a post or when you try to eat there or post to their socials. And yeah, that would really be a good tip. So once again, Sir Tej from Backlog na Naman Podcast, just want to say thank you once again. And it's really a fun time talking with you about games.
My pleasure. The pleasure is mine. I'm honored to be here.
So, yeah, that's the end of this week's podcast episode. And catch you guys next one. Bye.
Bye.